The term eugenics comes from the Greek word meaning well-born. In the 20th century, it came to mean something far more sinister, a scientific movement to create a more perfect race. Its most famous enthusiast was Adolf Hitler. The Holocaust Memorial Museum here in Washington this week opened an exhibit on eugenics called Deadly Medicine, Creating the Master Race. NPR's Christopher Joyce reports on medical science's deadliest experiment.
The purpose of the exhibition is to examine how science, under certain circumstances, can become the instrument of mass murder. Those circumstances arose in Germany after World War I. The country was devastated and humiliated. Germans looked inward. Always strong in science, they grew preoccupied with national health and strength. The exhibit at the Holocaust Museum begins with an image from a 1920s German film that shows thousands of youths exercising in a huge stadium. Susan Bachrach, an historian and curator of the exhibit, says this is where it started, with the message that the health of the nation was more important than the health of the individual.
And they had a dream that society was going to be able to eliminate people with disabilities. There was this kind of utopian dream, and it becomes perverted because it's made at the expense of a lot of individuals who didn't literally measure up.
Eugenics was built on the nation's post-war grief and anger. Some scientists and economists argued, why should the strong die while the imperfect are supported by the state? In this film, called Victims of the Past, images of mental patients in asylums provide the backdrop for the survival of the fittest propaganda.
In nature, all weak life perishes without fail. We humans have sinned terribly against this law of natural selection. We have not only sustained unworthy life, we have allowed it to multiply. Genetically healthy people live in narrow, lightless streets and dilapidated shacks. Idiots and the feeble-minded, however, live in palaces.
In the 1920s, this sort of perverted Darwinism became official science, with its own Eugenics Institute in Berlin. Anthropologists traveled the world measuring and testing different races to find evidence of Aryan superiority. At home, scientists did more than measure. They encouraged the sterilization of the mentally ill and handicapped. Michael Burley has written two books about eugenics and helped create the museum's exhibit.
In 1932, the Prussian government attempted to pass a voluntary sterilization law whose terms were then made compulsory when the Nazis came to power.
The men that came from government...
The men that came from the government to our school told the teacher...
Did not want to...
Deaf children... that they had to be sterilized because they didn't want deaf children to have children who would grow up and be deaf as well.
Helga Gross was one of those sterilized.
Then as the time became near, I was in the kitchen and I was cleaning. My mother came and said, Helga, sit down. And she explained, you have to go to the hospital in 2 days.
Eventually, the enthusiasm for sterilization swept up even those considered simply socially undesirable. Again, Michael Burley.
People were literally, being sterilized because somebody, a social worker or doctor or other sort of roving do-gooder, decided that they didn't like the way they raised their children or kept their house.
Eugenicists in other parts of Europe, Great Britain and the U.S., seized on the idea of widespread sterilization as well. In the U.S., several thousand people were sterilized before the idea was dropped. In Germany, though, the number of sterilized reached 400,000. In 1939, the Nazi eugenicists decided that sterilization wasn't enough. They began to kill the unwanted, starting with severely disabled infants and children.
And this is a memorial to some of these victims.
The faces of euthanized children look out from framed photographs on the wall.
These children were killed through the use of sedatives such as Luminol, and we show a small packaging for Luminol. Lethal injections, and sometimes starvation.
Paul Eggert lived in an asylum at the time. He had been sterilized, and then he witnessed the killings.
Then a nurse asked me, Paul, wouldn't you like to take the dirty sheets to the laundry? I thought, why not? I was happy to get out of the place and get some fresh air. I noticed while pushing this cart full of sheets that it was heavier than usual. Then, when no one was watching, I looked under the sheets. There they lay, the dead children who had been killed by injection that morning.
The eugenicist killed some 5,000 children. As Michael Burley points out, there was a war on. The Nazis were in charge. They could do what they wanted.
Then they moved into a much bigger program of literally culling the adult mental asylum population. And they established gas chambers in six different asylums. When they'd achieved their target figure, because this was all worked out literally with a slide rule, they then moved on to killing so-called sick concentration camp inmates and killed them. And then eventually, when they decided to exterminate the Jewish population of Europe, they applied the expertise and the technology to that.
Why did this happen in Germany? Bachrach and Burley say the photos and films and documents in the museum's exhibit provide this answer. A totalitarian government took what seemed to be a moral good, the improvement of national health and wealth, to a nightmarish conclusion, and many scientists wholeheartedly gave it legitimacy.
Germany presented, under Hitler, presented the perfect and explosive symbiotic relationship. Politicians needed the scientists to help legitimize their racial policies, and the scientists needed the politicians to help implement ideas that they had nurtured actually for several decades.
Many of the scientists had been middling professionals. Eugenics elevated them to the top of the heap. But after the war, eugenics withered and its practitioners tumbled back to earth. Some were tried and imprisoned. The infamous Joseph Mengele, who experimented on concentration camp victims, fled the country and lived in hiding. But many of his colleagues continued on as if nothing had happened, practicing medicine, psychiatry, or anthropology in their country among their victims. Christopher Joyce, NPR News, Washington.